We are on a series on the subject of hearing God and experiencing God every day, but the series is on hearing God, and today's message is entitled Stepford Christians. According to John chapter 10, verse 27, John chapter 10, verse 27, Jesus says, "The sheep that are my own hear and are listening to my voice." The sheep that are my own hear and are listening to my voice. The implication is that those who think they're sheep but don't hear me are not my sheep. Because Jesus says, "My sheep hear and are listening to my voice." Crossings is the name of a company. They may be a publishing company, probably are. They sent me an invitation to join their book club. I can get 3 books for 99 cents plus a free gift with my membership, and you know, then I have to buy a couple of books over the next couple of years and that sort of thing. But the interesting thing I found in the invitation that they sent me is, look at this cover. Look at this lady on this cover. Isn't she pretty? And very attractive woman. Sitting there with her hands crossed, fingers crossed, and her eyes closed. And it says, "When you talk, God listens." Now, isn't that just adorable? Can you hear can you hear the sarcasm falling out of each side of it? Isn't that just adorable? This is what everybody wants to hear. When you talk, God is listening. The question is that when God is talking, are you paying attention? See, we think that what we have to say is important. And really, sorry to bust our bubbles, but really what we've got to say is to God is much less important than what God is wanting to say to us. But you see, because we live in a, and I'm going to use this word correctly, religious culture, and because we have watered down what the gospel is really all about, and because we have set the bar so low for our relationship with Jesus, we have bought into the cultural mindset that it's not about me hearing from God, but it's all about me and whether or not when I'm talking, is God listening? Because you can't sell books talking to people about, are you paying attention? But this is what we want to talk about this morning as we're continuing this series. Is God talking? Jesus said in John, "My sheep are listening." So it's not a matter, it's not a question of, is God talking? The question is, are we listening? Therein is the question. I want to start off this morning with this statement. Our failure to hear God has its deepest roots in our failure to understand, accept, and grow into a conversational relationship with God. Our failure to hear God, basically, is because we're not in relationship with Him. The sort of relationship suited to friends who are mature personalities, and therein is another reason why we don't hear from God, because we're all a bunch of immature people. Well, how can you say that? Because what we really care about is what's in it for us. And isn't that immaturity? When you tell a child something to do and the child stands and argues with you, do we not realize that the reason the child is arguing is because they're not mature enough to understand that what we're telling them is what they need to be doing? If you say, "You can play in the yard. Don't go out in the street." "Why can't I go in the street?" Now, sometimes what we do is we go, "Because I said so." But that doesn't get us anywhere. Okay? But even if you explain, "Because I don't want you to get hit by a car," that doesn't necessarily mean that the child's maturity level can really understand what it means to be hit by a car. I can understand that. I've been hit by a car. I was in like the first or second grade, and my mother used to go out in the mornings, and she would get me across the street, and then I just had to go down the block, and then at the end of the block, and then there was my school, so I didn't have to cross the street coming back, and then my mother would always be on the porch waiting on me when I got home from school. And she told me to wait, and I ran out in front of this car anyway, and a car hit me, and I rolled over the top of it, and my mother ran out and got me and took me to the hospital, and a week or so later I was all well, and then my mother tore my rear end up with a belt for putting her through having to watch me get hit by a car. So anyway, but because you have no frame of reference of what it's like to be hit with a car, you know, then children will play in the street. But it's an immaturity on their part that they argue with us when we're telling them what's good for them. Will we all agree with that? Then the next step beyond that is that when Jesus tells us something, it's an immaturity on our part to be arguing with Him like as if He doesn't know what He's talking about. Our failure to hear God has its deepest roots in a failure to understand, accept, and grow into a conversational relationship with God, the sort of relationship that is suited to friends who are mature personalities in a shared enterprise. Jesus is sharing His life with me, and I'm sharing my life with Him, no matter how different I might be from Jesus or Jesus might be from me. Jesus doesn't have Don's personality. Don doesn't have Jesus' personality. Jesus didn't come, here's where we're going, everybody hold on to the edge of your chairs. Jesus didn't come to change my personality. He came for my personality to be under His control. Jesus lived His life with His personality and did it very well. I never made it 33 years without sin. Okay, so He did it very well, completed His course, fulfilled His purpose in life, and pleased the Father every step. Okay, He did very good with His life. He gave me my life. For me to live my life, not for Him to live His life out through me, but for me to live my life through Him. No matter how we may be different, that there is this mutual respect, a maturity in my personality, that I understand that we're friends, and as friends, we conversationally talk to each other. But I understand that in this friendship, He knows what's best. Never forgetting that He is God, and I am not. But God is not interested in, this is where I got my title today, Stepford Christians. As a matter of fact, a Christianity that has mindless conformity at the expense of freedom and respect, and which leads to the destruction of personality, is not what God is about. God is not about a Christianity that is a mindless conformity. We had a guy came to church here one Sunday. He and I met in the parking lot on the Saturday before the Sunday that he came. And we were talking, and he said, "You know, I've been thinking about coming down there and visiting your church." And I said, "Well, we would love for you to come. And so as part of the discourse and talking to him, I said to him, "We're all very casual. You're welcome to come." "Oh, no. No, I got to dress up and wear my best for God." And I said to him, "Why? You can put on all of your best for God on the outside, but God's not looking at the outside." He said, "You can be whited sepulchers full of dead men's bones. If you want to clean something up, it's not shave and shower and put on a suit and tie. It's get the stench out of the inside. That's the only cleanup God's interested in." Well, then later on in conversation, we're talking, and he said something about he quit going to the last church he went to because the preacher allowed women to wear pants. And I didn't say a thing about that. So the next morning he comes, and all three women standing up here in the praise worship team had pants on. I thought, ain't that just like God? But you see, we have these preconceived, mindless conformity. We're all supposed to be like a bunch of Nazis in lockstep with each other, and don't anybody... My expression is, nobody should pirouette in contradiction. You know what a pirouette is? That's when the ballerina steps up on her toes and spins. No one is to spin. No one is to pirouette in contradiction. No one is to dance their own conviction. That's what we're told. That's what we're taught. But Christianity is not a mindless conformity that at the expense of freedom and at the expense of respect that leads to the destruction of my personality. I own a doll. I want to show you my doll. This is my doll that I own. You like my doll? Thank you. This doll is called the Perfect Wife Doll. Blonde hair, blue eyes, you know, red lips. And when you press her hand, she says the sweetest things.
You're going out with the boys tonight? You work so hard. Enjoy yourself.
You're going out with the boys tonight? You work so hard. Go and enjoy yourself.
You're right. We don't need directions. Maybe you'll find a shortcut.
Did you hear that? You're right. Maybe we don't need directions. You'll find a shortcut. See, this is the perfect wife right here.
Don't worry about taking the trash out. I can use the exercise.
Isn't that adorable? See, I need this woman in my life. Because I don't have it over here, I'm going to tell you that right now. You know what I'm saying? Let's see what's next. Here we go.
It really doesn't matter if you leave the toilet seat up. It makes it easier to clean.
Yeah, see? You just got to look at things from the positive. This is my doll. This is the perfect wife. How many of you guys need one of these? Yeah, there we go. Chickens. Chicken. See, we got the prop. Yes, you did. Which makes you the perfect, perfect wife. But you see, this is how most of Christendom is like. We want to program people in such a way that when we press a button, it's bless God. Praise Jesus. This is the time now where we dance. This is the time now where we're quiet. This is the time where we open up our eyes. You know, and we want to just keep pressing the hands and making people do what it is we want people to do. But Jesus said, I have come not that you might have conformity, but that you might have life. That you might have spontaneity. That you might have freedom, and that your life would be an abundant life. Not,
you don't need a glass. Just go ahead and drink right out of the carton.
Yeah, see? We don't need that. But I love that little woman. So the goal of hearing God, the goal of hearing God is not the hearing of God, but is the pursuit of a mature, personal, and intimate relationship with God. That's very important that you understand that. The goal in hearing God is not to hear God, but is to develop or the pursuit of a mature, personal, and intimate relationship with Him. Let me give you an example of life with God. We teach children to walk when we want the children to walk. A non-walking child doesn't come up to you and go, "Hi, Mom, today I'd like to learn how to walk." What they do is that we decide, and isn't it funny how we teach children to walk and then we spend the next 20 years going, "Would you please sit down?" And then we teach them to talk and we spend the next 20 years going, "Would you please be quiet?" But anyway, the child learns to walk, first of all, by the introduction of the idea by the parent. Then the parent sets the example. I hold your little hands and your little feet go on top of my feet and we walk. Okay? And then I set you down. And standing right in front of you while you're doing like this, you know, I got my hands on each side of you. I say, take a step, come to daddy. Come. Isn't this how we do it? This is a perfect example of how we are to live our lives. God has demonstrated to us how life can be, is, in His kingdom. He doesn't walk for us. He was the example to us on how to walk. He holds our hands and puts our feet on top of His feet, and He leads us in the way that leads to life. And then He encourages us. But how many of you know? Well, let's take Jonathan. How old is Jonathan? He's 25, 20. He'll be 26 in August. He's 26 in August. He's as big as I am. If we had never taught Jonathan to walk, and I'm carrying a 26-year-old around who's as big as I am, would that not look a little ridiculous? And yet, somehow or another, we're wanting Jesus to carry us. And Jesus is saying, no, I'm just here to catch you when you fall. But if you want to walk, walk. If you want to run, run. If you want to stop, stop. But just do it with me. And He just encourages us and shows us and develops those that gifts and talents and all the purposes that He has in His heart for our lives is all developed by His encouragement. And it is all done inside of the safety of His love for us. I'm not trying to teach my child to walk because I'm ready for you to leave the home, but because I love you and I want to see you grow. Our problem with hearing God is that instead of seeing God as the encourager, our problem is that, like I mentioned last week, we have these misconceptions of God's nature, or we have a misconception of God's intent towards us. Like, for example, what is found in Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25. And I want you to turn there, please. And, I'm sorry you can't see it there. CB is Church Bible, so if you're using a Church Bible, it's on page 915. TM is the Message. For those of you who bought Message Bibles, it's on page 1368. I'm going to start trying to do it that way, and I'm going to try to make the transition over to just the Message is the transition that I'm in. But if you're using a Church Bible, it's on page 915. If you're using the Message, it's on page 1368. Matthew chapter 25, beginning with verse 14. Notice with me, please, the first five words. For the kingdom of heaven. What does that mean? That means how God operates on the earth. How God operates on the earth is like or is as a man who was traveling into a far country who called his servants and delivered unto them his... What? That's not Matthew chapter 25, verse 14? Yeah. Parable of the talents. Is that... Okay, somebody help me because I'm getting my hair. No, that's not the right... Yes, that is right. Delegated responsibility, okay. But the kingdom of heaven is likened to a man traveling to a far country who called his own servants, delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave five talents or responsibilities, to another two, to another one, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway he took his journey. Now see, what we're talking about here is misconceptions of how God operates. God, please look here, please. God says, I give to you according to your ability. Oh, we don't want to hear that. Because I don't want Judy to have more than me. I don't want to think that Judy... See, we're not talking about God's love. We're talking about God's trust in us. And some people have demonstrated that they can be trusted more than others. If you've got more than one child in your house that you've raised, you understand exactly what I'm talking about. My oldest daughter, Rebecca, she'd do something wrong and you'd say to her, your daddy is so disappointed in you. And she would break down and cry, have an emotional collapse, and never get 100 miles within whatever it was she had done. My son, Tripp, you could look at him and say, your daddy is so disappointed in you. And he'd go, so? Now, which one of the two did I love best? See, we're not talking about love. We're talking about one child demonstrates the ability to be trusted to one degree, and another child demonstrates an entirely different degree of trustability, if that's a word. And what happens, though, is the same thing that happens in this. Well, you let them do everything. Well, they have proven that they are trustworthy. Well, I'm trustworthy, too. Well, then let me tell you about the 50 million things you've done that proves that you are not trustworthy. Well, you remember everything at heart. And see, we've all had this argument, haven't we? Okay? This is exactly what's being talked about here in Matthew chapter 25. According to their abilities. And not everybody was equal. This is how God operates in the earth, verse 16. So, I say, then he received five talents, verse 16, then he that had received the five talents went, traded with the same, made another five, made himself ten. Likewise, he that had received two also gained another two, but he that received one went and digged in the earth, hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoned with them. He that had received five talents came and brought another five, saying, Lord, thou deliverest unto me, because of my ability, you delivered unto me five. I've gained, besides that, another five more. His Lord said to him, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Everybody see that? Joy of your Lord. He also that had received two talents came and said, Lord, thou deliverest unto me two talents. Behold, I've gained two other talents beside them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things, and you can enter into this same joy. Then he which had received one talent came and said, Lord, I know that you're a hard man. Now wait a minute. We got three people talking to the same person, and one of them says, not, I think you're a hard man, or I've heard you're a hard man. He said, I know. I know that you're a hard man. Now ask yourself this question. Where did he get that little piece of information from? I'm going to tell you where he got it from. Reaping without not sown, gathering without not strawed. Verse 25, I was afraid. Because fear is not an emotion. Fear is a spirit that taps into our emotions. Hear me. Fear is not an emotion. Fear is a spirit. For I have not given you the spirit of fear. Fear is a spirit that taps our emotions. We say, I feel afraid. But actually what you felt was a tap. That's what you felt. Okay? And that spirit whispered into that servant's ear and said, he's a hard one, isn't he? Because here's the point, ladies. Here's my little sideline point. Fear will distort your picture of God. Fear. It's okay what she does. She's perfect. It's okay. She's perfect. I just wish I'd heard what she said because I think she's so funny. I was afraid and went and hid thy talent in the earth. And lo, thou hast what is thine. His Lord answered and said to him, thou wicked and slothful servant. Now see, the Lord puts it right back where it belongs. The problem is not my problem. The problem is your problem. Thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knowest that I reap where I sowed not and gathered where I strawed not. The other two knew the same thing, but did he respond the same way? No. Thou oughtest to have put my money to the exchangers, and then by my coming I would receive mine own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it to him which hath 10 talents, for unto every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness, there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. You see, ladies and gentlemen, we have three servants here. Two of them understood what God was like. One of them had the ability to understand, but he was controlled by fear. And the misconceptions based on our fears is what causes us to have a distorted picture of who God is, what God's like, what God will do, and what God will not do. You follow me? Now then, if we are viewing God as some sort of arbitrary higher power. Isn't that generic? Higher power, who cosmic force, may the force be with you, cosmic force that, you know, throws down lightning bolts and strikes people with cancer and all this kind of... If our fears and our misconceptions of God are what we hold on to, we will never be able to hear God. Because we will not want to hear from someone we are afraid of. We just assume them stay away. But I do want you to notice that there was some communication, though, between the Lord and the slothful, unprofitable, evil servant. There was some communication. I want you to notice, you don't necessarily need to turn there if you want to, but you can put this in your notes because it's just this one verse, and it's a verse everyone knows. Matthew 8:13 says, Matthew 8:13 is the end of where the centurion came to Jesus and said, I have a son who is sick. And Jesus said, well, let's go to your house. And he goes, no. Don't come to my house. No. I'm a man under authority and you're a man under authority. Just speak and the word will be done. And Jesus said, never have I seen such great faith. And then 8:13, what Jesus says to the centurion is this. Then to the centurion Jesus said, go, it shall be done for you. To what degree? As you have believed. As you have believed. You see, I believe it's possible to force God's hand where His dealings with us are from an I am the boss, it's going to be my way kind of way. But this isn't what God is wanting. It is done to you as you believe. It is done to you as you believe. So in other words, if I've got Christian A sitting right here and they see God as a loving, compassionate, merciful God, God relates Himself to that child, to that Christian, as a loving, faithful, compassionate God. But if I have one over here who says, God's angry, God's mad, God's a dictator, God doesn't have your best interest in mind, God deals with that person based on that person's belief about God. And you go, well, why would God do that? Because some relationship with God is better than no relationship at all. And so once again, we get back to this thing of God doesn't need to change to accommodate my thinking of Him. I need to change to understand the reality of who God is. Now, I will grant you that we come from a great disadvantage because most of what has been betrayed to us as God, God was sitting back going, I have nothing to do with that whatsoever. I will give you that. Okay? I don't think that you strap 20 pounds of bombs on a 12-year-old and walk him into a marketplace and let him blow himself up to demonstrate who God is. I don't believe that. Okay? But I also don't believe that it is God who in our white shirts and blue suits and steeples and large organs and huge communion tables and even more massive pews who is standing there, I don't believe it is God, putting His finger on the end of our nose and telling us we are sorry, rotten, no good, hell-bent, sinners. We may very well be. But God motivates. It is the love of God that constrains me and draws me to obedience, not the anger of God. Although, God is not to be messed with, disrespected, back-talked, because He can still open up the earth and all the sons of corn fall right in. Yep. And Him just close the earth up and go, well, that's the end of that problem. I mean, they came and said, Moses, who put you in charge? And God said, I did. Moses, you're still in charge. Carry on. So we have to change to a greater understanding of who the real God is. What God is really like. That's what I'm trying to say. What God is really like. The object in talking to God is to grow in God. Questions? Not only do we have misconceptions concerning God, but we have misconceptions concerning ourselves. Will you turn with me to Acts chapter 14? If you're in a church Bible, it's on page 1018. If you're in the Message, it's on page 1515. Acts 14. I'll give you a second to get there. Paul and Barnabas are in Rome. I believe it's Rome. Beginning verse 11, and the crowds, when they saw what Paul had done, lifted up their voices, shouting in the Laodicean language. Must have been Laodicea then, not Rome. The gods have come down to us in human form. They called Barnabas Zeus, and they called Paul because he led the discourse, Hermas, god of speech, and the priest of Zeus, whose temple at the entrance of the town brought bulls and garlands to the city's gates and wanted the people and joined the people in offering sacrifice. But when the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard of it, they tore their clothing and dashed out among the crowd, shouting, Men, why are you doing this? We are only human beings of nature like your own. What I want you to be sure you understand here is this. We might have this concept. I'm sure God speaks to you, but He wouldn't speak to me because, well, you know, I've done some really terrible things. So what are we saying there? Are we saying that God lines us all up and He goes, well, I know who you are, but I ain't talking to you, but I know who you are and I will talk to you, but I know who you are and I won't talk to you. I mean, that's what we're saying. We're acting like that in some way, somebody is more spiritually blessed or super spiritual or more deserving. And the ground at the cross was what? Level. The ground at the cross is level. There's not anybody more deserving or less deserving than you are. Because at the cross, the ground is level. See? There's nobody in the front of the line and nobody in the back of the line at the cross. Now, Paul and Barnabas came running out going, We are human just like you are. Don't worship us. It's not people we think of as being more godly that God will speak to. God will speak to everyone who will listen. And in fact, most of you's testimony in this room this morning would be is that the times when you heard God the most were the times when you thought God would not speak to you. Amen? So we have to realize that God will speak to us, and it doesn't, and in His speaking to us, that doesn't make us a preferred child, doesn't make us the special child, doesn't elevate me over you, or you over me, or them over us. See, and I'm hanging here for a second, because we have this religious culture in our country where the guys on the TV, they hear from God. And anything they say, that's what I should be doing because they hear from God. So they wipe their head with some kind of little hanky and ask us for $500 because God said, and we send them the money. Like a bunch of morons. Because somehow or another we think of them as, it's just like, I'm going to get down and get real personal here. Okay? Some people want me to pray for them because you're the preacher. I'm sorry. And that carried what kind of specialness with God? That God was going to listen to me before He was going to listen to Leroy because of what? But you see, we have this hierarchy in our minds. If I could get Billy Graham to pray for me, if I could get Oral Roberts to pray for me, if I could just. And I stay so busy now, I don't even know who the new guys are. But there's all kinds of people all over this country that people are thinking to themselves, if I can just get this one or that one or the other one to touch me, pray for me, or whatever. Like God is some kind of a respecter of persons, when in reality we all know that God isn't. We are only human. Just like you, with a nature just like your nature. It's just that we have taken on the nature of God. And God chooses when and when not to work through us. Everybody with me so far? Okay, so turn with me then to my last reference, Exodus chapter 3. Because in Exodus chapter 3, we find the longest recorded conversation between a human man and God. The longest recorded conversation between a human man and God. Exodus chapter 3, Church Bibles, page 54, The Message, page 85. Now Moses, this is the human man is. And see, look right here before you read on. Look here just a second. Somehow or another, we have this concept and it has kept us from really picturing the reality of who God is. We have this concept that somehow or another, these people in the Bible, they weren't really human. That David, having killed a lion, killed a bear, killed Goliath, he was somehow superhuman. But David was probably not much more if 13. Saul took off his armor and said, well, if you're going to go fight him, you need to put this on. And David was running around inside of Saul's armor going, I can't operate inside of this. I can't fight this way. I'm going to fight the way I've always fought. Moses was granted. Well, let's just back up even a little further. Moses was born into this world through the womb of a woman, just like you were born in this world through the womb of a woman. Now, I will grant you that after his birth, God had to intervene to save his life. They took him, put him in a basket, stuck him in the Nile. Pharaoh's daughter found him, took him into her house. Okay? But I promise you that we could go right across this room right now, and if I asked many or probably all of you if there was something spectacular that happened in your early life, that God protected you from something or delivered you from something or whatever, we could all go, yeah, I can remember it. See, Moses was not any different than any of the rest of us. He spent 40 years living in privilege. But he showed us that he was just like the rest of us because he got angry and he killed a man. Then he ran off. He got married to a woman who had a temper. Well, I mean, she circumcised a son with a rock. That's a pretty angry woman, okay? I wouldn't want her to be my mama. He runs off and he marries this woman who's got a temper. He lives with her for 40 years, and now, in Exodus chapter 3, a very human man out there, and he smells, and he's sweating, and he's hungry, and he's thirsty, and he's never heard God's voice. Up to this point, never heard God's voice. Kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. He led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Hebron. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of the bush and looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire and the bush was not consumed. They tell us that scientifically there is such a thing as internal combustion, that plant life in the desert can get hot enough that it internally combusts and catches on fire. What caught Moses' attention was not that there was a bush on fire. What caught his attention was is that the bush was not consumed. Moses said in verse 3, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, not why the bush is burning, but why the bush is not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses, And Moses said, Here am I. And he said, Draw not hither, put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. God established really quick, as he will with each and every one of us, I am God, and Charlie, guess what? You are not. The minute you run into God, this is how the conversation will start. I am holy. And you would need to keep that in mind. In fact, if you'll notice that everywhere where we have an occurrence of where people saw God, what they did was fall down. It just kills me, these people about, I can't wait to get to heaven. I'm going to see Jesus and run up and hug his neck. I doubt it. I seriously doubt it. Because when you see him for who he really is, I have a feeling we all going to be on our face. It might be 1,000 years before we ever even venture to look up again. Because of what we do, because we just cannot believe. I said at Glenna's funeral, this week, I said, because Glenna was a, I'm not exaggerating here if I say she was a very outspoken woman. You never wondered where you stood with her. Never wondered what her opinion was about anything. She'd be more than happy if you stepped out of line to articulate to you in no uncertain terms, so that you had no denial what she was talking about, where you need to get back in line. But I said at her funeral this week, Jesus saw something with Glenna that none of the rest of us have ever seen. Because when Glenna closed her eyes on this world and opened up her eyes in the next world, for once in Glenna's life, she was speechless. Because how many of you know when you open up your eyes on the other side, you're going to be speechless? Or running off at the mouth so hard you can't hardly stop, one or the other. Yes, Charlie? Thank you, Charlie. That's a very good point to put in here. Moses, as 80 years old, never heard God speak. But when he heard God speak, he didn't go, Who are you? He knew the voice of God when he heard it. It's holy ground. Verse 6, Moreover, he said, I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in the Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of the taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of the land unto a good land, and a large and large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, Jebusites, and as Dr. Pickett used to say, backbites. Now therefore, behold, the children of Israel is come unto me. I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppressed them. Come now therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. Now notice with me, please, the tenure of God's voice here. He didn't say, I've heard the oppression of my people in Egypt. I thought I'd come down and ask you. I was wondering if you would like. I'd like for you to go home, talk to your wife, and see. If God had been a really good Christian, he would have poached Moses and said, I got something I want you to pray about. The only problem is God's not a good Christian. But had he been a good Christian, he would have said, I've got something I want you to pray about. See, God, being God, says, this is what I'm going to do. I was in a conversation with a couple times this week with some people where I was reminded of the walls of Jericho. Who was it that went down there? His name eludes me just that quick. Joshua. Joshua's out there and he's looking at Jericho, trying to figure out what in the world we're going to do. And an angel appears. Joshua draws his sword, and this is Joshua's question. Whose side are you on? You with us or with them? Notice the angel didn't answer that question. He answered the question, but he didn't answer that question. His answer was, I'm on the Lord's side. The inference being, whose side are you on? And ever since I've discovered that, ever since God showed me that in His Word, that's where I stand. Well, Martha's upset with Charlie, and Charlie's upset with Martha. Which one of them's right? I'm not on Martha's side. I'm not on Charlie's side. I'm on the Lord's side. The decision's now up to them. The Lord said, this is what I'm going to do. Now the decision's up to you. Whose side are you on? I've seen the oppression. I've made a plan. I'm going to deliver my children. Let's go. See, all of us middle-aged white American males, we want heaven to be a democracy. We want God to be white, middle-aged American male Republican. That's what we all want, see? And we want God, when He makes a decision, to go, I have an idea. How many of you want to go along? You know, we want to vote. But God doesn't hold votes. God has the same attitude I had with my children when they were coming up. This is not a democracy. This is a benevolent dictatorship. That's what you're being raised in. Not a democracy. Well, I think, Dad, well, nobody cares. This is the way we're going to do it. It's a benevolent dictatorship. Where am I? 11, thank you. Moses said unto God, who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh, that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, God said, certainly, I'll be with thee. This shall be a token unto thee, for I have sent thee, that when thou bringest forth the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God upon this mountain. And Moses said unto God, behold, when I come unto the children of Israel and say unto them, the God of your fathers hath sent me unto you, they shall say to me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? Now here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. It is our human nature. That is not an excuse nor a reason. Just an understanding. It is our human nature that when God speaks to us, we see all the problems with what He said. What we have to understand is no matter what the problem is that we can perceive in our mind that is wrong with what God has said, God is bigger than any problem we can perceive. Because God is not talking from a perspective of what I'm going to do. God is talking from a perspective of what He's already done. He's just trying to bring you into the picture. So when God says, you are healed, and you go, but my back is killing me, God is not asking you about your back. God is making a declaration. It's already done. Now we just got to move from where we are to where He is. But I just want you to notice that this is a human man, and he is responding the way we as humans do. God says, look at this big picture, and we say the picture is too big. And God says, with me, all things are possible. Now, Nisi and I were talking about this morning, about preachers, I won't call any names who we were talking about, preachers who want to take the verse of delight yourself in the Lord, and the Lord will give you the desires of your heart. Okay? So what we do is we go, gosh, you know, my desire is to have $100 million. So I'm just going to delight myself. Oh, God, you're good. I love you. Now, where's my $100 million? What we have to understand is that when you delight yourself in the Lord, the Lord gives you His delights, and then He gives you His delights that are in you because you're wanting His delights. Now, we manipulate the verse to make it think like all we got to do is dance and sing and wave and pray and fast and hug a neck, and God's going to jump on the bandwagon and give us everything we want. That's malarkey. When you are lost in Him, then you want what He wants. And when you want what He wants, He'll give you what you want. Because what He wants, it will always be in your best interest. But this is how conversations with God go. We talk about the problem. God says, verse 14, I am that I am. Period. You am what? Well, you can put whatever you want through there. That's why he said, I is what I is. This is the original Popeye right here. I am what I am. This is the original Popeye right here. After that, there's a blank. Fill it in. I am your health. I am your Redeemer. I am your Savior. I am your God. I am your joy. I am your strength. I am that I am. Just tell them, I am sent you. Verse 15, God said moreover to Moses, thou shalt say unto the children of Israel, the Lord your God of your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, so forth. Verse 16, I wanted to skip down to the conversation back. Look down at 19. I'm sure that the king, God said, I'm sure that the king of Egypt will not let you go. No, not by a mighty hand. And I will stretch out my hand and smite the Egyptians with all the wonders which I will do in the midst thereof. After that, he will let you go. And I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, and you shall leave without not go empty-handed. Verse 22, I tell the women to give you their gold and silver and all that. Verse chapter 4, Moses answered and said, but, now this is where we get into problems when we put our but in what God is saying. Behold, they will not believe me, nor hearken to my voice, for I will say, the Lord hath not, they will say, the Lord hath not appeared unto thee. And the Lord said unto him, what's in your hand? He said, a rod. Cast it to the ground. He cast it to the ground and it became a serpent. Now look at the end of verse 3. And Moses fled before it. Now look at verse 4. And the Lord said to Moses, put forth thine hand, take it up by the tail. He put forth his hand and caught it, and it became a rod in his hand. Now, we read verse 1, verse 2, verse 3, verse 4. I want to tell you that I believe that between verse 3 and verse 4 could have been a week. I mean, just stop and think. What we're dealing with here is a human man. One minute he's holding a piece of wood that he's carried around for 40 years while he's worked for his father-in-law Jethro. He throws it down, it becomes a serpent. Now, I don't know about you, but the only good snake is a dead snake. Now, people say to me all the time, that's ludicrous. You know, black snakes, they do so. I don't care. I don't care if they're black, red, purple, green, white. I don't, spoke dotted, neon. I don't care. The only good snake is the one that just got run over. Right. Never met a good, well, some of them eat snakes and came, or eat rats, and I got decon. I don't need a snake for my rats. I got mothballs to keep the snakes away, and I got decon to keep the rats away. Okay, so I don't need only good. So, I mean, I just put myself in his place. Now, if I think he's more than me, more special than me, Mr. Superhuman him, you know, and I make all these excuses, then I see him in verse 3 throwing it down and in verse 4 picking it up. But if I see him as human, well, just how long would it take God to convince you to pick up a snake, number one, and number two, by its tail? Now, you got to understand in his nature, he's already questioning, who am I going to say sent me? How am I going to know? They ain't going to believe me. God says to him, pick it up. Okay, no, I'm not going to pick it up. Yeah, you're going to pick it up. Not going to pick it up. I know, I'm telling how long that conversation went on. But just as he started to pick it up, God goes, well, wait a minute. Don't pick it up by his tail. Pick it up by his tail. Wait a minute now. And we back up. We start the conversation all over again. Don't we? Because Paul and Barnabas said, don't worship us. We are human with a nature just like your own. Moses was human with a nature just like ours. Now, for the sake of time, I'm going to skip over the rest of it down through. For your notes, you can put chapter 4, verses 1 through 17. But there's another incident here because Moses, being just like you and I, is hard-headed. Okay? He throws down this rod. God finally talks him into picking it up. He picks it up by the tail. It becomes the rod of God now. And Moses says, that was pretty good. But I'm still not totally convinced yet. So God says to him, okay, take your hand. Stick it inside of your cloak. Moses goes, okay. He's standing there and he's feeling his ribs. Gosh, it's about lunchtime, I guess. God says, pull your hand out. He goes, ah! I mean, if you had put it in white and it had come out with the skin dropping off of it, what would you have done? That's what leprosy is. You would have freaked out. You'd have been running around that little red, that little on fire bush. You'd have been screaming and you'd have been hollering. You'd have been grabbing, Yeah, you'd have been grabbing that hand and holding on to it. And, oh, you've been hollering, oh my God. And he goes, yeah, that's right, that's me, that's me. Oh my God, yeah, that's me, oh my God. God says, stick your hand back in there. He pulls it back out and he goes, praise God. Because he was just like us. Here's the point I'm trying to make with Moses and the longest recorded conversation between a God and man is that Moses was not something special. He was called to do something special, but the only special one in the conversation was God. Because God made it all possible. Moses added nothing to the equation. I won't say nothing, but nothing to the equation really. Because it was a done deal. The children of Israel were going to be delivered. Moses was going to do it. End of subject. We need to understand, ladies and gentlemen, that God is God. Always has been. Always will be. He wants to speak to you and I, but He's not looking for Stepford Christians. He's not looking for us all to be in lockstep. He's not looking for us to push our hands.
A new reversible drill. Oh, honey, it is just what I needed.
A new reversible drill. That's just what I needed. And you do know not to buy your wife an appliance on an anniversary, don't you? Okay, I'll just give you a little sideline, a little piece of information there. We're not, God's not looking to push our buttons and us kind of blah, 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 blah. We have the concept that He's the puppeteer and we're just the puppets. But actually what Calvary did was cut the strings and give us the freedom to live in Him. I live and move and have my being. And it is when our concept is correct about God, then we can enter into the Lord's joy. See, the third servant didn't enter into his Lord's joy. But the first two did. Not based on performance. Hello, that's my trap. Productivity equals worth. That's my trap. That's where I live and fight and wrestle. The first two didn't enter the Lord's joy because of productivity. They entered the Lord's joy because of faithfulness. Because even the third guy could have let somebody else been faithful and brought back what he was given with usury, but he did. But he was unfaithful. And therein lied his problem. God is not looking for us to be in lockstep, all saying the same things and all smiling the same way. And yeah, everything's just fine here in Stepfordville. You know, in the movie Stepford Wives, there was a new family that moved in. They began to be suspicious about all the women who were saying all the same things and doing all the same things. And so they kidnapped his wife, made a robot, brought the wife back, so that she would say what all the other wives were saying and do what all the other wives were doing, and there would not be any disagreement at all. But this is not heaven. We don't all cut our hair the same. We don't all look the same. We don't all respond the same. But as long as we respond and live and grow within His Spirit, we don't all have to be in the same place in the yard. We just got to all be in the yard. And some people can be swinging, and some people can be on the seesaw, and some people can be on the merry-go-round, and all of that is okay as long as we are all in the same yard. I'm reading a book. I'm not ready to endorse it and recommend it to you, but in closing, I'll tell you, I'm reading a book. And if I finish it and it finishes as well as it's going so far, I'll tell you the name of it and let you get a copy of it if you'd like. But in this book, this guy meets God at a cabin out in the woods. And he goes there to intentionally meet with God. And God, have you gotten the book yet? Have you started on it? How far into it are you? Just gotten to the cabin? Okay. God shows himself to this man as a black woman, which is why this is in the Christian fiction section. I'm just kidding. He didn't say that, did he? Teresa Lambert will be talking to me after church. I'm going to tell you that right now. She'll have something to say about that. But you know, actually, when the guy wrote this book, because he had God show up as a black woman, no Christian publishing company in the world would publish the book. None of them would. And I thought to myself, how ridiculous is that? Because how many of you know God is a black woman? And he's a white woman. And he's an Asian woman. And he's a Japanese woman. He's an Indonesian woman. He's a Hispanic woman. Because it isn't that God is a black woman, but black women are an expression of who God is. When people say, when I see this stuff about something about, I've seen bumper stickers where they refer to God as being a she, I'm not offended by that. Where do you think she's came from? They came from the same place he's came from. God is a black woman and a black man, and yet God is not a black man and not a black woman. But black people, white people, all the peoples, they all came from God. Anyway, the point I'm wanting to make is this. When he meets God, she's cooking. And I'm about 6 or 8 chapters into and further in after he's met God. And every time God shows up, God's bringing something to eat. Or they're meeting in the kitchen, or they're sitting down to eat. And let me tell you why that's important. When Jesus was raised from the dead, the first recorded thing, after he met with Mary, you know, why weepest thou? Go and tell my disciples I've risen. The first recorded event of Jesus after he's raised from the dead was that he's cooking. He's on the shore. He's cooking fish. Doesn't say anything about him cooking for 3 years. In fact, he said, take the food from that boy right there. I'll just do the praying, and then y'all just hand it out. Never even records he even touched it. But the first recorded thing of Jesus after his resurrection from the dead is he's cooking. He says, I go and prepare a place for you. I got this banquet table I'm working on. Well, we're all going to come and sit down and enjoy this together. It is in God's nature to serve and to nourish, which is what cooking is all about, isn't it? So anyway, for the first several chapters here, every time he runs into God, God is cooking something. Sometimes it's something he recognizes, sometimes it's something he doesn't recognize, but it's all good. Even when he doesn't recognize something, it's still good. A couple of times he eats way too much and makes himself sick. But isn't that how it is when we sit down with God? We want all we can get. Even we'll flounder ourselves. Because the Bible says to us, oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. But how many of you know that when we're sitting around the table and eating, we're much more relaxed than at any other time? Because that's the kind of relationship God is endeavoring to have with us, is one of freedom, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness within Him. The things that really make us happy. Because that's how God is. He's not the ogre sitting on a throne, not sure what we're going to do next. But boy, when He catches us doing something, that's not what he's like at all. And what saves us, redeems us, heals us, and sets us on the right path is His love for us. Let's pray. God, I thank You for a love that is beyond our ability to be able to understand, but not beyond our ability to experience. So, God, we ask You that we might experience Your love, that we would quit trying to be what everybody else has told us that we're supposed to be and what we're supposed to be like and what we're supposed to look like and what we're supposed to say and how we're supposed to feel, but that we will just simply in every area of our lives call You Lord. And what You say goes. In Jesus' name.